It's a hot day of pickles. Fortunately, there's a nice breeze. That wind tunnel we've got here across the street from Memorial Park at Camden Yards is feeling pretty good. It's inside access. Jason on vacation. Myself and the Bone taking you till 5:30, and then it's Baltimore baseball tonight. Tim Barbalace and Jim Hunter, and joining us now, another member of our BBT crew. He's the Oriole Hall of Famer. He's Mike Bordick. And Bordy, thank you as always for joining us. Let's start with Dean Kramer, and what did you see last night with him? Like, the difference, throws five shutout innings in Seattle, and last night he seemed to be fighting his control.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, left some pitches in the middle of plate. Had a hard time, finishing some hitters. I think there were a couple, two strike big hits. I think the home runs were on two strikes. And, so he just had a hard time finishing off hitters. And it was a little funny, listening to his interview after the game. It kind of caught me off guard a little bit. Like, he didn't think like there was much of a problem with it. He felt like he executed. And, when you give up, five runs, in four innings, I would think you'd want to reevaluate, each pitch and see how you did afterwards. I don't know, man. I think he ought to be a little bit harder on himself.
Well, Bordy, I feel like there's two sides of this, and I'm with you, but, like, he gives up the home run in the first, and that was crushed. And then he gives up the home run to end his day. Well, basically, he got Morel, and then his day was over to happen the fourth. The runs he gave up in between was a lot of soft contact. Maybe he was referring to that. But, yeah, you gave up four runs on two bombs. You got to reevaluate where you put the ball.
No, absolutely. Yeah. It's location. It might even be pitch selection, that gave up the home run. So there's got to be – you can't be happy with it. I don't care if you made a great pitch and a guy hits a home run. There had to have been a better pitch in that mix somewhere, to get that guy out. I think there has to be some evaluating. Listen, he was throwing strikes. He wasn't hurting himself with walks. Ben McDonald said last night that he just needed an out pitch. It's just something to get a swing and miss, and just didn't quite have it last night.
Bordy, we're bigger Dean Kramer people than Jason and most, but doesn't last night just kind of reaffirm that Kramer can't be your starter in Game 3 of a playoff game?
Well, I personally think Kramer adds a lot of value to this rotation. And I think he's a big reason why they were in the position they were in last year. I think my hope is that he can kind of right the ship a little bit because, this is obviously a pretty inconsistent start. The start before was nice. I don't think anybody knew what to expect, right, especially after his rehab assignments. And then the start before he went on the IL wasn't even that good against St. Louis. So, I don't know. You just kind of wonder where he is right now. Is it going to be inconsistent the rest of the way? Is there still something lingering? He doesn't seem like he's got any health concerns or anything like that, and I'm sure they wouldn't run him out there if he was hurting a little bit. Just needs to tighten it up a little bit, whether it be his pitch mix or just location, and, find ways to try to get out of those tough situations.
We're talking to Mike Bordick. It's Inside Access here on the Fan. And Bordy, let's follow up on that. We are 20 days till the trade deadline. We had Bob Nightingale from USA Today on Monday. He said a lot of trade business won't really start heating up until after the draft, which ends on the 16th. That's in 6 days. Like, how aggressive would you like to see the Orioles be at the trade deadline?
I would love to see them be aggressive and send a message like, we're just not messing around, man. We're going to be the kings of the East, not just, last year and this year, but, for a couple years to come. And that could mean making a deal to land a pitcher that they have control of. I think, there's some really kind of sticky areas, right? Because there's some good arms out there, but you don't really want to burn up a couple more players in the organization just to get a rental player. Yeah, you might be able to hoist the trophy, but you wonder about the depth. Is that going to be it? Are we just going to hoist one and that be it? So I think the Orioles want sustained success. The moves won't be made until after the draft, but the foundation has been laid. Calls have been made. Potential partners have already been reached out to. and things are being talked about. And I believe the Orioles have definitely been in contact with teams. I know they keep a lot of stuff close to their vest. Nobody leaks it out of that, out of the warehouse now. So it'll be interesting and I think fun to see how the Orioles work the next couple weeks.
How cool was it to see Jordan Westberg make the All-Star game, Boardy, following Devers backing out?
That was great, man. I think me personally, I'm just a huge fan of Westberg, and I when I saw him, you know, come into the Orioles organization and just kind of followed him through, and then had a chance to watch him do his work and go about his business. He's just like the ultimate pro, and I know Brandon Hyde alluded to that, and that's just every manager's dream. You just don't even care. Put Westberg's name in the lineup, you know he's going to be prepared. He's going to care about, you know, putting the best foot forward to not only make himself as good as he possibly could be, but for the betterment of the team. And you know, Westberg is just the perfect mold for that. And what a great example, I think. Humility, great talent, and with a knack for just winning and being a clutch performer. Yeah, he should have been on initially. I think there are a couple guys that should be on, you know, that All-Star game lineup. And you never know. There's still a few days left where things could happen, and the Orioles could be represented even once more. But, yeah, I'm super happy for Westberg and the Orioles organization.
Boardy, did you envision him taking this type of leap in his first full season in the bigs, though?
To be honest with you, no, because last year there were still a lot of question marks. I think everybody liked who he was, but the power wasn't translating. At least it didn't show up a lot last year. Nobody knew if he was going to have, you know, the pull power. Could he use all fields? Was he going to be able to be a consistent hitter? And, man, oh, man, has he proved himself and then some? You talk, I don't know, in my opinion, might be the Orioles' best clutch hitter. And I don't know if anybody that's gotten bigger hits, you know, at the end of ball games than Westberg. So, yeah, there's a lot of trust in him, man. And I agree. I think this is a big surprise this year. I felt like he was going to be a really good big leaguer, but I think this is really impressive. And now you've got, you know, you've got three of the best young players in the game. Here you go. Westberg, you know, Gunner, and Adley. Line them up, man. I don't know if you're going to find a better threesome than this.
Boardy, so Westberg gets in the All-Star game as a third baseman, but he also plays a lot of second. Was it second last night? And with that in mind, if you were the GM of the Orioles, and I just named you GM of the Orioles, how quickly are you getting Kobe Mayo up here to play third base?
Well, man, oh, man. That would be pretty fun, too, wouldn't it? Stick Westberg over there at second base and Mayo, and just let these guys run with it for about 6 years and see what happens. Now, it's pretty exciting, right, because that could happen tomorrow. That could happen any second. And you talk about potentially a big deal, a big trade, you know. But how do you know? That's the thing, you know. Until, you know, they do something in the big leagues, like Westberg's no longer a suspect. He's a prospect. I mean, he's a legit major league dude. Mayo's tearing it up in AAA, but we see how the ups and downs go. Do the Orioles have the patience to be willing to withstand, you know, maybe a month and a half or two of maybe a Mayo not being the productive bat that, you know, everybody had hoped for? So that may take a little bit of time. I still think the question mark is defensively, is he as good as any of the gloves that the Orioles have right now? And, man, oh, man, that's going to be tough to beat. And I know Mayo's got a, you know, everybody talks really highly of him, but our Orioles defense is pretty special.
So I'm putting you down for hold the Mayo at the moment, correct?
Hold the Mayo. I love it. Yes.
Boardy, are you seeing anything different out of Ryan Mountcastle? We know that he's a streaky hitter and he was dealing with an illness, but he's in a four for his last 32 stretch.
Yeah, that's my fault because on Baseball Tonight I had him
to
really have a monster month of July, and he's actually gone the other way. Yeah, a little inconsistent right now. Kind of, I don't know, man. He goes through these stages, doesn't he, where he locks in, he starts to use the whole field. You know, he stays on the slider down and away, stays on that outside pitch, and works it the other way. And then there are times where he feels like he might need an extra home run, so he just starts hacking, like free swinging, and expands the zone a little bit, and then every now and then gets himself in between. So I think, unfortunately, that's where he is right now. And but he could, you know, Mountcastle could turn any second, any day, and next thing you know, carry this team like he did last year. That's what we talked about on Spotlight. For a month and a half, he was one of the Orioles' best offensive players that really helped them through the dog days. And they're going to need his bat to help them through the dog days again. This ain't going to be easy. I know the Orioles are in a great spot right now, but these are the tough months, man. It's really tough to push through, and you need guys to find a little bit of consistency.
Bordy, before we let you go, what are you expecting from Corbin Burnes tonight, who looks like he's going to make his last start before the All-Star break?
Yeah, I think it's going to be he's going to put an exclamation point on things here to round out this first half. Just so deserving, and, I mean, my gosh, did Elias do one of the best moves, right, I think, in the offseason, a nice surprise by landing Corbin Burnes. And when you make a move like that, give up a couple of your top prospects, you only hope and pray that he'll have an all-star type year, and Corbin Burnes has not disappointed. I mean, it's been exceptional every time out, and I expect him to be great again.
Mike Bordick, you're always great, man. We always appreciate your time. Thank you so much, and we will chat next week.
All right, you guys. Have a great afternoon.
You too. Mike Bordick, Oriole Hall of Famer, part of our Baltimore Baseball Tonight crew. Coming up next, we head down on the farm. I'll update you on Kobe Mayo, on Chase McDermott, on Jackson Holliday, and much more. That's next here on The Fan.
So Kerstad is out. One down, ninth inning. Kobe Mayo the batter, and there's a home run. Oh, my. Oh, that ball.
That was hammered.
That ball is halfway to Kannapolis.
Kobe Mayo with one of his, 21 bombs now on the season. And remember, he missed time with the broken rib. And, yeah, he's killing the ball down at Norfolk. But let's keep running Ramon Urias out every night. I believe they're showcasing him. Last night was not the showcase from Ramon with the error. They booted a double play ball. Did not do much at the plate. Not a great night for Ramon while Kobe Mayo continues to rake.
Yeah, 18 games since being back up with Norfolk. He's hitting .324 OPS over 1,000. He's got 5 homers, 17 RBIs in 18 games since being back up with the Tides, Ken. It's just, he's ready. I mean, clearly the bat at a bare minimum is major league caliber today and an upgrade.
I have a prediction for you, Bone.
Please.
Opening day infield a year from now. Opening day. Adley Rutschman will be behind the plate. Gunnar Henderson will be at shortstop. Those are givens. Your second baseman will be Jackson Holliday. Your third baseman will be Jordan Westberg. Your first baseman will be Kobe Mayo.
Oh!
That is
spicy.
Your opening day infield for next year.
So is Ryan Mountcastle.
He will not be an Oriole.
Now, is that going to happen at the deadline?
It could, but I don't know that you're getting max value for a guy who's not hitting. But
yeah,
you might
right now.
But I think this team, and this team's very good, but I think this team needs a jolt of something. Is it Kobe Mayo? Jackson Holliday hadn't started throwing yet, so you can't put him in the infield yet. Though he is, he's got. I saw there was a piece, I think, in the Sun about him. He's gotten his patience is back. He's starting to hit. Like, once he gets back to playing second base, I wouldn't mind seeing this whole thing come together sooner rather than later. That said, it probably for Jackson Holliday ain't happening this year unless he gets really hot. But I think that's what's going to be your opening day infield.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me. And early on in the season, and heck, you can go back to spring training where Kobe Mayo was playing exclusively at third base,
where now
you're starting to see some more first base, where past two games he started at first. He's been at first base 3 out of the past 5 games, and I think the whole month of June he played first base twice. Or month of April.
Yeah.
April, excuse me. He played
playing
first
a lot
base
of first
twice.
Bone.
He is playing more, and you'd have to think, and just talking to various beat guys that we have on the show, all of them unanimously say it's got to be this month.
Yeah.
We thought that it would make sense this week. Right now, the Tides, they're in Memphis playing.
They're walking in Memphis. Todd Karpovich thinks he's up when the All-Star break, like after the All-Star break. We had him on yesterday. Let's get to Chase McDermott. Chase McDermott is an arm. Remember, we heard Mike Elias went on the Tides broadcast, said that him and Povich were pretty close. Povich is already here. Chase McDermott did not fare very well in his last outing, though.
No, he didn't even get out of the first inning, and it was against the Durham Bulls, which, coincidentally enough, his prior start was against the Bulls as well, in which he went 7 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 12 strikeouts. Well, it was a 180 from that. He lasted just a third of an inning, 2 hits, 4 earned runs, 3 walks in a third of an inning. And that's been the bugaboo with Chase McDermott, much like Cade Povich.
I like Bugaboo.
You like Bugaboo?
Yeah.
I think Chase would be above using Bugaboo. I think he uses more words that I can't really understand or spell.
Well, he's a writer.
He is. He's a wordsmith.
Yes. Let's get to the previously mentioned Jackson Holliday, and how's he looking these days?
Yeah, Jackson Holliday, he's been doing well, and he's still just DHing. And interestingly enough, since he returned from the IL, he's walked 15 times in 9 games.
Yes.
And he does have 8 hits, 5 of which have gone for extra bases. But that was one of his big key attributes, is the on-base percentage. And that has been there every single level in the minors, but it wasn't there, of course, in his brief stint in the majors, where he was striking out at an alarming rate.
Jackson Holliday, once I think he gets to play in second base again, we can start turning the clock on as far as when we could see him in the major leagues, because I think that bat could give them a boost down the stretch.
For sure, and someone who continues to produce, even though he had that cup of coffee in the bigs, is Connor Norby, and he's one of those guys, along with Kyle Stowers, that we expect to be on the move. Since getting sent back down on June 13th, 21 games for Connor Norby, he's hitting .314, .970 OPS. He's got 6 homers, 19 RBIs, Ken, in 21 games. So he's very much showing well for the other 29 teams.
By the way, somebody else who continues to produce down a level is Matthew Edsel, who we had on when he was back in Frederick. Not only with the bat, with his legs, continues to run, continues to hit.
Yeah, he's 8-for-13 since getting bumped up with Bowie, and he's running as well. He's got 3 stolen bases in that time, and he definitely seems like one of those fast risers, because he got the Bowie first out of his draft class,
yes,
if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, what was he, 10th round?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, and this, again, this is another example of you can't be scared to trade some of your prospects because you're so good at drafting.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think of all of the names in which they weren't the Orioles' first selection in the draft. I mean, you look at Jordan Westberg, who made his first All-Star game. He wasn't. Gunnar Henderson wasn't. Stowers going back to that draft. Joey Ortiz going back to the 2019 draft. There's plenty of guys in this farm system that weren't their first draft pick in the draft. And a guy that wasn't a draft pick, he was an international signing, Sam Basayo.
Uh-huh.
Ken, and he got selected to participate in the Futures game this weekend. Basayo, his slash line, .277, .341, .460 at just 19 years old.
Yeah, he's going to be there doing some special drills now this year as part of the Futures game as well, and he's involved in that. Orioles lineup just came out, Bone.
Give it to me.
And I was on it. You'll hear it when you get there, but I had a prediction about center field, and I was correct. But Gunnar Henderson leaned off at shortstop. Adley Rutschman's the DH tonight, batting second. Ryan Mountcastle at first base, batting third. Anthony Santander is in right field, batting fourth. Jordan Westberg batting fifth at third base. Austin Hayes in left field, batting sixth. Jorge Mateo batting seventh at second base. Colton Cowser, your center fielder, batting eighth. And James McCann is the catcher, batting ninth. And I speculated at the top of the show that it seems like against a lefty, they like Cowser over Mullins in center field.
They do, despite both of them being lefties. Cowser does have better numbers against lefties compared to Cedric Mullins. And the platoon with Hayes and Kerstak continues, and you figured that Mateo would be back in the lineup against the lefty.
Absolutely. Like, basically, this went. The only thing that's a little surprising, and I think they're trying to give him a confidence boost, is where Mountcastle.
Yeah.
Like, I'd almost have Westbrook batting third and Mountcastle batting fifth, but they're gonna have Mountcastle in the three hole.
Yeah. Yeah, trying to get him going. 4 for his last 32.
Coming up next, it's a Wednesday. And what's a Wednesday without our best bets from our friend Tim Murray from VSiN? Where does he want you to put your money? He's going to tell you next here on The Fan. We are live from Pickles across the street from Oriole Park and Camden Yards. Orioles and Cubs game 2 of the 3-game set tonight. Baltimore baseball tonight. Tim Barbalace, Jim Hunter coming at 5:30. But it's a Wednesday. And joining us now, our buddy Tim Murray from VSiN. And, Tim, thank you as always for joining us. So I assume by virtue of the fact that you're with us that you survived the cross-country drive.
Survived it. Really wasn't too bad. I think when we chatted, it was towards the tail end, and I flew back. So we're back here in Las Vegas. I will head back to the lovely East Coast at the end of July, spend a nice week at Bethany Beach, and then we will make the trek back to Las Vegas. So there will be another cross-country drive at some point here in the near future, but we survived the first one, so that's a positive.
What's the temperature there in Las Vegas?
I believe it was a balmy 117 yesterday.
Nice.
117?
But yeah. It's a dry heat.
Dry heat.
Do you even outside?
I just went outside to get my dry cleaning, not because it
was... Do you have to shower again?
I mean, it's really hot, man. I know it's muggy and humid by you guys, so I'm not going to complain, but it is... It's pretty gross, and thankfully casinos in my house pump AC, so
Yes, they do.
That's the positive here with Las Vegas.
Well, a positive of your cross-country trip, you said you use it as a time to prep for college football.
Yeah,
it's going to be here before we know it. And you were actually at the Big 12 Media Day yesterday. So let's start with Iowa. Mm-hmm. 7.5 wins. Where are you?
Yeah, so Iowa being in the Big 10. The Big 12 we can get to in a little bit. Fun day yesterday. I was not there today with Coach Prime chatting with the media, but a pretty cool scene, to say the least, there at Allegiant Stadium. But look, Iowa's one of these bets, Tim, that you're going to hate yourself for making this bet throughout the year. But all we hope for is for it to cash. And I just had Phil Steele on my podcast, the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, earlier this week, and he kind of pushed me over the edge on Iowa. When you look at this team, they finally got rid of Brian Ferentz, the offensive coordinator, Kirk Ferentz's son, of course, and they bring in Tim Lester from Western Michigan, and you just ask yourself, could it get any worse? Like that's the question you have to ask yourself. Cade McNamara coming off of an injury. This team was still able to win 10 regular season football games a year ago with just horrific quarterback play. I mean, they had a kid by the name of Deacon Hill who was starting games for them, and he could not get an FBS scholarship this year. He went to Utah Tech, just up the road from me in St. George, Utah, in the FCS ranks. So I look at this team. It's got to be one of the best defenses in the country. Phil Parker back for another year. 7.5 wins is their over-under. And look, there are a lot of toss-up games for Iowa this year, but there's only one game, guys, where they are a clear underdog, and that's in October on the road at Ohio State. But this is a Iowa team with the unbalanced Big Ten schedule that we all know about now. No Michigan, no Oregon, no Penn State, no USC on that schedule this year for Iowa. So, look, they do play Maryland this year, which I think is a toss-up game on the road there in College Park. But all in all, when I look at it, if this is an Iowa team that loses to Ohio State and can find a way to go 3-3 in what I deem to be their toss-up games, we're getting over 7.5 wins. It might not be pretty. It might be a little bit painful, but that is something I have gotten to the window, and DraftKings still has over 7.5. And I think FanDuel might even have a little less juice. I think it was -134 on the Hawkeyes. So, yeah, Iowa over 7.5. Let's embrace the pain and cheer for the Hawkeyes.
Talking to Tim Murray. It's Inside Access here on The Fan. Tim, UCLA, a new member of the Big Ten. Their over-under is 5.5. Where are you on them? And also, selfishly, I know you're not prepared for this, but I'm sure you are. Oregon, where are you on them?
Oregon's so damn good. Dylan Gabriel is an absolute perfect fit for this offense. And as crazy as this sounds, Ken, and I'm not blowing smoke up the Oregon Duck fan on 105.7 in Baltimore, but I think Dylan Gabriel is a better fit for the Oregon offense with Willie Stein as the offensive coordinator than Bo Nix, who ultimately finished top three in the Heisman, was the favorite going into the Pac-12 championship, drafted 12th, even though he shouldn't have been, by the Denver Broncos. I think Dylan Gabriel is a perfect fit for them. Oregon might have the best wide receiver core in the entire country. This is a team that I love their head coach and Dan Lanning. It would be a disappointment, a massive disappointment, if they're not in the playoff. And this team has the talent to be one of the best teams in the country. And what's interesting to note about Oregon real quickly before we get to UCLA, Oregon hosts Ohio State on October 12th. Oregon has not been an underdog at home since 2018, and they were an underdog in some game of the year lines. That line has since flipped, so money has come in on the Ducks for that October 12th showdown against Ohio State. They do have to go on the road to Michigan on November 2nd, but this is a team that avoids Penn State, which is one of the better teams in the conference. They avoid Iowa, who we just talked about. They also avoid Nebraska, who I think is going to be an improved team. So I do like the Ducks. And probably I won't play their over. I think there's a way to bet them instead of just looking at 10.5. But I think Oregon, it would be a pretty big disappointment if they don't make the playoff. As for UCLA, I mean, you talk about a team that, you know, kind of got a gut punch late in the process. Remember, Chip Kelly was sniffing around a lot of NFL jobs, guys. And ultimately, when Bill O'Brien decided to leave Ohio State as their OC and go take the Boston College head coaching job, Chip Kelly jumped ship and went to Ohio State. So they had to get a new head coach very quickly in Deshaun Foster, who has no head coaching experience. He's, you know, coming from the NFL ranks. He's a UCLA guy, which I think is long-term a good thing for the Bruins. They need that because, look, there's a lack of fan support there in that city. Eric Bieniemy is going to be a new offensive coordinator, so I'm curious how that will play out. But let's just talk about their schedule, guys. We just talked about Iowa, right, where you're an Iowa team that gets no Michigan, no Oregon, no Penn State, no USC. For UCLA, they have a non-conference game on the road at LSU. Yikes. Oh. Oregon at Penn State. They have to travel to Nebraska, they play Iowa, and then they wrap up Pac-12 play with USC, where they're a home underdog right now. So I'm looking at six games right now where they're going to be an underdog. I actually think Indiana could be a plucky team this year with Kirk Cignetti heading there from James Madison. You know, we don't really know what Washington's going to be this year. I'll be honest, I think a road trip for the Bruins to Rutgers in the end of October will be a challenge. I think that's a game that Rutgers will expect to win. And then you also just have to wonder, when you look at this schedule, guys, what's their mindset, UCLA, after running through this gauntlet, traveling across the country, playing your arch rival, and they wrap up the regular season playing Fresno State, who preseason Mountain West rankings came out today, courtesy of the media, and they're the third best team in the conference, and Mikey Keene is the best quarterback in that conference. So I think UCLA under 5.5. I think it's going to be a challenging year. I would be surprised if we saw the Bruins make the make a bowl game this year.
What were some of your observations being at the Big 12 Media Day yesterday, Tim? And do you like any of those teams' totals?
I think Big 12, Tim, and we could dive into this as the summer goes on, because I have nothing officially yet from the Big 12. However, I think this is the most fascinating conference, at least from a Power Four perspective in the country. And what I mean by that is, yes, the Big Ten has juggernauts in Oregon and Ohio State, and the SEC is the SEC with now Texas and Oklahoma heading in there, and Georgia's going to be an absolute machine this year. And the ACC's got Miami, Florida State, and Clemson. I look at the Big 12, guys, a conference that's going to get an auto bid to the quarterfinals because of the new structure of the college football playoff. I legitimately think eight teams could win this conference. So I think from a standpoint of entertainment value, parity, I think that's where this is such a unique conference entering this year. You know, the one thing I saw Avery Johnson walking around, he's the quarterback of Kansas State, a true dual threat guy. He's a big boy, man. He's got some broad shoulders, awesome hair, by the way, just flowing out there.
Big bonus.
Yeah, so we got some good-haired quarterbacks in the Big 12, I might add. So we got Cam Rising, who said he will not likely come back for an eighth year that he would actually be eligible for at Utah. But I'm telling you, man, and I'm not being hyperbolic, I think that conference is the most fascinating conference in the country because you look at so many of those different teams from, you know, the preseason favorite, which is Utah. I can go through the list here right now. Utah, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, who obviously Mike Gundy had some dumb, idiotic statements yesterday.
Yeah.
Iowa State, Arizona, Kansas, UCF. I look at all of these teams, so intriguing, and I didn't even mention the one that's going to attract the most eyeballs in Colorado and, you know, whether or not they're going to be able to make a bowl game with two pros on their roster, two first-round picks, and Hunter and Shador Sanders. So fascinating to see that conference play itself out. And, you know, they're really leaning into it this year. Kind of this is a conference that is going to be as competitive as any conference out there in the country.
Tim Murray, let the people know what's going on at VSiN.
Yeah, catch me every weeknight, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern time. A little programming note for those of you in the area. Next week, Masson, 7 to 10 a.m. I'll be doing the morning show. So check
nice.
Me out there. I'll be doing the morning show, follow the money. And then last, Coach Ken tonight. Coach Ken Niumatalolo, longtime Navy coach. Love Coach Ken. He's now the head coach of San Jose State. He's going to jump on my show tonight, so looking forward to talking to an old friend, Coach Ken, tonight, and catch that on VSiN Primetime.
Tim Murray, always great, man. Thank you so much for your time. Welcome back home to the 117-degree heat, and we will chat next week.
All right, enjoy some of those fried pickles for me, boys.
I'll do my best. Hey, coming up next, Jordan Westberg. He's an all-star, and he capped it off with a bomb. All the young dudes next here on The Fan.
Fly ball deep left center back toward the wall. This ball is going to be a home run. Jordan Westberg homering to the seats in left center. Not a cheapie. That ball landed right near the 398 sign. It's now a 2-1 ball game. Number 15 for Westberg.
Cubs TV on the call, and Jordan Westberg had an interesting afternoon. He met with the media, showing all class about not making the All-Star game. Then a half hour later, Rafael Devers announced he's out, Westberg in. He's an All-Star. We're live from Pickles across the street from Oriole Park and Camden Yards. Orioles and Cubs game two of the three games set tonight. Baltimore baseball tonight. Tim Barbalace, Jim Hunter coming at 5:30. But it's a Wednesday. And joining us now, our buddy Tim Murray from VSiN. And Tim, thank you as always for joining us. So I assume by virtue of the fact that you're with us that you survived the cross-country drive.
Survived it. Really wasn't too bad. I think when we chatted, it was towards the tail end, and I flew back. So we're back here in Las Vegas. I will head back to the lovely East Coast at the end of July, spend a nice week at Bethany Beach, and then we will make the trek back to Las Vegas. So there will be another cross-country drive at some point here in the near future, but we survived the first one, so that's a positive.
What's the temperature there in Las Vegas?
Oh, I believe it was a balmy 117 yesterday.
Nice.
117?
But yeah. It's a dry heat.
Dry heat.
Do you even go outside?
I just went outside to get my dry cleaning, not because it
was... Do you have to shower again?
I mean, it's really hot, man. I know it's muggy and humid by you guys, so I'm not going to complain, but it is... It's pretty gross, and thankfully casinos in my house pump AC, so
yes,
that is...
Yes, they do.
That's the positive here with Las Vegas.
Well, a positive of your cross-country trip, you said you use it as a time to prep for college football.
Yeah,
it's going to be here before we know it. And you were actually at the Big 12 Media Day yesterday. So let's start with Iowa. Mm-hmm. 7.5 wins. Where are you?
Yeah, so Iowa being in the Big 10. You know, the Big 12 we can get to in a little bit. Fun day yesterday. I was not there today with Coach Prime chatting with the media, but a pretty cool scene, to say the least, there at Allegiant Stadium. But look, Iowa's one of these bets, Tim, that you're going to hate yourself for making this bet throughout the year. But all we hope for is for it to cash. And I just had Phil Steele on my podcast, the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, earlier this week, and he kind of pushed me over the edge on Iowa. When you look at this team, they finally got rid of Brian Ferentz, the offensive coordinator, Kirk Ferentz's son, of course, and they bring in Tim Lester from Western Michigan, and you just ask yourself, could it get any worse? Like that's the question you have to ask yourself. Cade McNamara coming off of an injury. You know, this team was still able to win 10 regular season football games a year ago with just horrific quarterback play. I mean, they had a kid by the name of Deacon Hill who was starting games for them, and he could not get an FBS scholarship this year. He went to Utah Tech, just up the road from me in St. George, Utah, in the FCS ranks. So I look at this team. It's got to be one of the best defenses in the country. Phil Parker back for another year. 7.5 wins is their over-under. And look, there are a lot of toss-up games for Iowa this year, but there's only one game, guys, where they are a clear underdog, and that's in October on the road at Ohio State. But this is a Iowa team with the unbalanced Big Ten schedule that we all know about now. No Michigan, no Oregon, no Penn State, no USC on that schedule this year for Iowa. So, look, they do play Maryland this year, which I think is a toss-up game on the road there in College Park. But all in all, when I look at it, if this is an Iowa team that loses to Ohio State and can find a way to go 3-3 in what I deem to be their toss-up games, we're getting over 7.5 wins. It might not be pretty. It might be a little bit painful, but that is something I have gotten to the window, and DraftKings still has over 7.5. And I think FanDuel might even have a little less juice. I think it was minus 134 on the Hawkeyes. So, yeah, Iowa over 7.5. Let's embrace the pain and cheer for the Hawkeyes.
Talking to Tim Murray. It's Inside Access here on the Fan. Tim, UCLA, a new member of the Big Ten. Their over-under is 5.5. Where are you on them? And also, selfishly, I know you're not prepared for this, but I'm sure you are. Oregon, where are you on them?
Oregon's so damn good. Dylan Gabriel is an absolute perfect fit for this offense. And as crazy as this sounds, Ken, and I'm not blowing smoke up the Oregon Duck fan on 105.7 in Baltimore, but I think Dylan Gabriel is a better fit for the Oregon offense with Willie Stein as the offensive coordinator than Bo Nix, who ultimately finished top three in the Heisman, was the favorite going into the Pac-12 championship, drafted 12th, even though he shouldn't have been, by the Denver Broncos. I think Dylan Gabriel is a perfect fit for them. Oregon might have the best wide receiver core in the entire country. This is a team that I love their head coach and Dan Lanning. It would be a disappointment, a massive disappointment, if they're not in the playoff. And this team has the talent to be one of the best teams in the country. And what's interesting to note about Oregon real quickly before we get to UCLA, Oregon hosts Ohio State on October 12th. Oregon has not been an underdog at home since 2018, and they were an underdog in some Game of the Year lines. That line has since flipped, so money has come in on the Ducks for that October 12th showdown against Ohio State. They do have to go on the road to Michigan on November 2nd, but this is a team that avoids Penn State, which is one of the better teams in the conference. They avoid Iowa, who we just talked about. They also avoid Nebraska, who I think is going to be an improved team. So I do like the Ducks. And probably I won't play their over. I think there's a way to bet them instead of just looking at 10.5. But I think Oregon, it would be a pretty big disappointment if they don't make the playoff. As for UCLA, I mean, you talk about a team that, you know, kind of got a gut punch late in the process. Remember, Chip Kelly was sniffing around a lot of NFL jobs, guys. And ultimately, when Bill O'Brien decided to leave Ohio State as their OC and go take the Boston College head coaching job, Chip Kelly jumped ship and went to Ohio State. So they had to get a new head coach very quickly in Deshaun Foster, who has no head coaching experience. He's, you know, coming from the NFL ranks. He's a UCLA guy, which I think is long-term a good thing for the Bruins. They need that because, look, there's a lack of fan support there in that city. Eric Bieniemy is going to be a new offensive coordinator, so I'm curious how that will play out. But let's just talk about their schedule, guys. We just talked about Iowa, right, where you're an Iowa team that gets no Michigan, no Oregon, no Penn State, no USC. For UCLA, they have a non-conference game on the road at LSU. Yikes. Oh. Oregon at Penn State. They have to travel to Nebraska. They play Iowa. And then they wrap up Pac-12 play with USC, where they're a home underdog right now. So I'm looking at six games right now where they're going to be an underdog. I actually think Indiana could be a plucky team this year with Kirk Cignetti heading there from James Madison. We don't really know what Washington's going to be this year. I'll be honest, I think a road trip for the Bruins to Rutgers in the end of October will be a challenge. I think that's a game that Rutgers will expect to win. And then you also just have to wonder, when you look at this schedule, guys, what's their mindset, UCLA, after running through this gauntlet, traveling across the country, playing your arch rival, and they wrap up the regular season playing Fresno State, who preseason Mountain West rankings came out today courtesy of the media, and they're the third best team in the conference, and Mikey Keene is the best quarterback in that conference. So I think UCLA under 5.5. I think it's going to be a challenging year. I would be surprised if we saw the Bruins make a bowl game this year.
What were some of your observations being at the Big 12 Media Day yesterday, Tim? And do you like any of those teams' totals?
I think Big 12, Tim, and we could dive into this as the summer goes on, because I have nothing officially yet from the Big 12. However, I think this is the most fascinating conference, at least from a Power 4 perspective in the country. And what I mean by that is, yes, the Big 10 has juggernauts in Oregon and Ohio State, and the SEC is the SEC with now Texas and Oklahoma heading in there, and Georgia's going to be an absolute machine this year. And the ACC's got Miami, Florida State, and Clemson. I look at the Big 12, guys, a conference that's going to get an auto bid to the quarterfinals because of the new structure of the college football playoff. I legitimately think 8 teams could win this conference. So I think from a standpoint of entertainment value, parity, I think that's where this is such a unique conference entering this year. The one thing I saw Avery Johnson walking around, he's the quarterback of Kansas State, a true dual threat guy. He's a big boy, man. He's got some broad shoulders, awesome hair, by the way, just flowing out there.
Big bonus.
Yeah, so we got some good-haired quarterbacks in the Big 12, might I add. So we got Cam Rising, who said he will not likely come back for an 8th year that he would actually be eligible for at Utah. But I'm telling you, man, and I'm not being hyperbolic, I think that conference is the most fascinating conference in the country, because you look at so many of those different teams from, you know, the preseason favorite, which is Utah. I can go through the list here right now. Utah, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, who obviously Mike Gundy had some dumb, idiotic statements yesterday.
Yeah.
Iowa State, Arizona, Kansas, UCF. I look at all of these teams, so intriguing, and I didn't even mention the one that's going to attract the most eyeballs in Colorado, and you know whether or not they're going to be able to make a bowl game with two pros on their roster, two first-round picks, and Hunter and Shador Sanders. So fascinating to see that conference play itself out. And, they're really leaning into it this year. This is a conference that is going to be as competitive as any conference out there in the country.
Tim Murray, let the people know what's going on at VSiN.
Yeah, catch me every weeknight, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern time. A little programming note for those of you in the area. Next week, Masson, 7 to 10 a.m. I'll be doing the morning show. So check me out there. Be doing the morning show, follow the money. And then last, Coach Ken tonight. Coach Ken Niumatalolo, longtime Navy coach. Love Coach Ken. He's now the head coach of San Jose State. He's going to jump on my show tonight, so looking forward to talking to an old friend, Coach Ken, tonight, and catch that on VSiN Primetime.
Tim Murray, always great, man. Thank you so much for your time. Welcome back home to the 117-degree heat, and we will chat next week.
All right, enjoy some of those fried pickles for me, boys.
I'll do my best. Hey, coming up next, Jordan Westberg. He's an all-star, and he capped it off with a bomb. All the young dudes next here on The Fan.
Fly ball deep left center back toward the wall. This ball is going to be a home run. Jordan Westberg homering to the seats in left center. Not a cheapie. That ball landed right near the 398 sign. It's now a 2-1 ball game. Number 15 for Westberg.
Cubs TV on the call, and Jordan Westberg had an interesting afternoon. He met with the media, showing all class about not making the All-Star game. Then a half hour later, Rafael Devers announced he's out. Westberg in. He's an all-star. And after the game, manager Brandon Hyde talked about his third baseman.
I mean, he literally does everything right. The way he prepares, the way he plays. We just had a hitters meeting, and I thought it was awesome. Our hitting guys recognize this. We're down 12-0 in the fourth. Mountie hits a base hit. Jordan's at first base. Mountie hits a base hit to right field. Westy goes first to third. That sets up Austin Hayes for a sac fly. It's an RBI for a teammate. That sets up the bottom part of the order to have guys on base. It just epitomizes, honestly, who he is. He just plays the right way, so hard, prepares incredibly well. He just does everything right. Obviously, the way he's handling the media, he's doing that great job at that as well. He's just very, very professional and really, really good player. You know, I'm so fortunate to have the opportunity to manage him, as well as so many other guys in there. I wasn't with him along the way, but I noticed, you know, it's really easy to notice right away how hard this guy works, and he's the first in the clubhouse, and he's in the weight room constantly, and he takes his profession extremely seriously, and he really wants to win. I think his routine, probably major league routine, has gotten better as he's kind of understood what the big leagues is like, but, you know, he just does everything right.
Great stuff from the skipper there, and I'll tell you, like, I was a fan of Westberg from the jump. And it's kind of like, because I felt like he had a little B.J. Surov or Paul O'Neill to him. Like, he's just a kind of a dog and the kind of guy you need on a baseball team, a winning baseball team. But the numbers are there, too. And you heard in the Cubs announcer, that home run, not a cheapie. He's got legit power.
Oh, absolutely legit power. But, I mean, you really don't hear Brandon Hyde gush like that. I mean, gush like that for, what, a minute quote? And just, he called him a pro's pro, and just being able to adapt to this game and talking about him establishing kind of more of a routine at the major league level. But Jordan Westberg, I think he is the most clutch player on this team. I think the numbers bear it out that he is the most clutch player on this team. His ability to hit with runners in scoring position, his ability to hit in high leverage situations. But I also think, when we talk about Jordan Westberg, the one word that always comes to mind is consistency. Mm-hmm. And there was that game, a week or two ago, Ken, where he had that 0-for-4, uncharacteristically bad at-bats. He had three strikeouts. Very next night, follows it up with a multi-hit game. And that's... That is the type of consistency that you come to expect out of Jordan Westberg, despite this being his first full year.
I think that was Jason was out. I don't remember.
I think
he had a procedure, and we were talking about it because it was noticeable how bad the at bats were that the next day. Like, that's not Jordan Westberg. Like, these he doesn't have bad at bats like that. Especially, he might have one, but the whole night was bad at bats, and he did. He bounced back the next day, I think, with a four-hit game. He's on pace to drive in near 100 runs. He's got 15 homers. Like, you talk about this team, and Adley got a little back on track again with a couple of base hits last night, multi-hit game. Been a little bit of a funk. Had some bad at bats in Oakland, so much so that he dropped an F-bomb that was audible because there's nobody at the games. But Westberg, when you think of all the stars and Adley and Gunner and guys that are coming, but you got to think of him in that conversation as well.
You have to. And there might be some time where maybe he flies under the radar a bit because he is that kind of quiet, reserved guy where this whole roster, it's just full of young personalities where Jordan Westberg is just that kind of lunch pail type player, goes in, not flashy at all, but he produces.
Yeah, the Orioles got a good one in Jordan Westberg, who, again, was not a top five pick.
Nope.
He was like a sandwich first, like a 30th overall, a bonus first-round pick.
Every team had an opportunity to get
him. Yeah, you know, so Jordan Westberg, Orioles are lucky to have him, and I don't think Jordan Westberg is going anywhere. As I told you earlier in the show, opening day infield, I got Westberg at third, I got Gunner at short, I got Jackson Holliday at second. This is next year. And Kobe Mayo at first. That's your, and with Adley behind the plate.
Sign me up. Let's ride, Ken.
Coming up next, Orioles and the Cubs, game two of this three-game series. Corbin Burns on the bump for the O's. Baltimore baseball tonight. Tim Barbalace, Jim Hunter coming up at 5:30. But coming up next, Tyler Wells, Orioles pitcher. Obviously, he's out with Tommy John, but he's going to join us. The Orioles, some of the Orioles are promoting something really cool. He's going to talk about that. We'll get to see, hear how he's doing and the event coming up. Tyler Wells joins us next here on The Fan.
Fly ball deep left center back toward the wall. This ball is going to be a home run. Jordan Westberg homering to the seats in left center. Not a cheapie. That ball landed right near the 398 sign. It's now a 2-1 ball game. Number 15 for Westberg.
Cubs TV on the call, and Jordan Westberg had an interesting afternoon. He met with the media, showing all class about not making the All-Star game. Then a half hour later, Rafael Devers announced he's out. Westberg in. He's an All-Star. And after the game, manager Brandon Hyde talked about his third baseman.
I mean, he literally does everything right. The way he prepares, the way he plays. We just had a hitters meeting, and I thought it was awesome. Our hitting guys recognized this. We're down 12-0 in the fourth. Mounty hits a base hit towards the first base. Mounty hits a base hit the right field. Westy goes first to third. That sets up Austin Hayes for a sac fly. It's an RBI for a teammate. That sets up the bottom part of the order to have guys on base. It just epitomizes, honestly, who he is. He just plays the right way, so hard, prepares incredibly well. He just does everything right. Obviously, the way he's handling the media, he's doing that great job at that as well. He's just very, very professional and really, really good player. You know, I'm so fortunate to have the opportunity to manage him as well as so many other guys in there. I wasn't with him along the way, but I noticed, you know, it's really easy to notice right away how hard this guy works, and he's the first in the clubhouse, and he's in the weight room constantly, and he takes his profession extremely seriously, and he really wants to win. I think his routine, probably major league routine, has gotten better as he's kind of understood what the big leagues is like, but, you know, he just does everything right.
Great stuff from the skipper there, and I'll tell you, like, I was a fan of Westberg from the jump. And it's kind of like, because I felt like he had a little B.J. Surhoff or Paul O'Neill to him. Like, he's just a kind of a dog and the kind of guy you need on a baseball team, a winning baseball team. But the numbers are there, too. And you heard in the Cubs announcer, that home run, not a cheapie. He's got legit power.
Oh, absolutely legit power. But, I mean, you really don't hear Brandon Hyde gush like that. I mean, gush like that for, what, a minute quote? And just, he called him a pro's pro, and just being able to adapt to this game and talking about him establishing kind of more of a routine at the major league level. But Jordan Westberg, I think he is the most clutch player on this team. I think the numbers bear it out that he is the most clutch player on this team. His ability to hit with runners in scoring position, his ability to hit in high leverage situations. But I also think when we talk about Jordan Westberg, the one word that always comes to mind is consistency. Mm-hmm. And there was that game, a week or two ago, Ken, where he had that 0-for-4, uncharacteristically bad at-bats. He had three strikeouts. Very next night, follows it up with a multi-hit game. And that is the type of consistency that you come to expect out of Jordan Westberg, despite this being his first full year.
I think that was Jason was out. I don't remember.
I think
he had a procedure, and we were talking about it because it was noticeable how bad the at bats were that the next day. Like, that's not Jordan Westberg. Like, these he doesn't have bad at bats like that. Especially, he might have one, but the whole night was bad at bats, and he did. He bounced back the next day, I think, with a four-hit game. He's on pace to drive in near 100 runs. He's got 15 homers. Like, you talk about this team, and Adley got a little back on track again with a couple of base hits last night, multi-hit game. Been a little bit of a funk. Had some bad at-bats in Oakland, so much so that he dropped an F-bomb that was audible because there's nobody at the games. But Westberg, when you think of all the stars and Adley and Gunner and guys that are coming, but you got to think of him in that conversation as well.
You have to. And there might be some time where maybe he flies under the radar a bit because he is that kind of quiet, reserved guy where
this whole roster, it's just full of young personalities where Jordan Westberg is just that kind of lunch pail type player, goes in, not flashy at all, but he produces.
Yeah, the Orioles got a good one in Jordan Westberg, who, again, was not a top five pick.
Nope.
He was like a sandwich first, like a 30th overall, a bonus first-round pick.
Every team had an opportunity to get him.
Yeah, you know, so Jordan Westberg, Orioles are lucky to have him, and I don't think Jordan Westberg is going anywhere. As I told you earlier in the show, opening day infield, I got Westberg at third, I got Gunnar at short, I got Jackson Holliday at second, this is next year, and Kobe Mayo at first, and with Adley behind the plate.
Sign me up. Let's ride, Ken.
Coming up next, Orioles and the Cubs, game two of this three-game series. Corbin Burns on the bump for the O's. Baltimore baseball tonight. Tim Barbalace, Jim Hunter coming up at 5:30. But coming up next, Tyler Wells, Orioles pitcher. Obviously, he's out with Tommy John, but he's going to join us. Some of the Orioles are promoting something really cool. He's going to talk about that. We'll get to hear how he's doing and the event coming up. Tyler Wells joins us next here on The Fan.